Welcome to another episode of the Bites of Wisdom podcast. I am one of your hosts, John Ballone. As a general reminder, you'll start to see the rebranding of the podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and other platforms. Don't panic, we're just growing up. You can find out more info at biteswisdom.com. In this episode, Jeremy and I start our conversation talking about the perils of Apple's iCloud technical support. In our discussion, it quickly turns into a conversation about venture capital investments in a world where there's no longer any cheap money. Finally, we end talking about nuclear energy and the stigmas surrounding it in America. If you're ready, we're ready. Let's roll. Before we go into some crazy off the kilt ranting, oh, I got my water. That's all that matters here. I have something that infuriates me. Well, an example of something that infuriates me. For about a year now, I've been using, I don't know if you use this, but iCloud Plus, the custom domain features. Have you used
that? Nope.
Do you know what it is?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'll explain it for the folks that might not know what it is. The cool thing about it, it lets you basically add a custom domain. You either purchase it from Cloudflare or you can, I think you can transfer it to Cloudflare and use it on Apple. And you can create domain, you know, emails for your family at that domain name. And then, you know, it's a vanity domain name. So in my case, I have my family, my last name dot family. And I use that for email. I can use it for, you know, the sign in purposes for iCloud accounts and things like that. And it's
didn't know about that. I did not know about the it might be worth it to get a family one just for the login, because I don't trust Google with my login anymore.
So the one thing you can't do yet is it, your iCloud ID name is always the name that you created it with. And this is before, but when you change it to the default user, anytime that you sign in with Apple, it'll use that email as the default email.
Okay. Then I have already for my personal domain. It uses gives the vendor my personal vanity domain, but I don't want to use my mac.com email address. I want to use my vanity domain.
Right. Which, you know, for Apple, the only thing I can't log into that with is the Apple iCloud account. But for everything else, it uses, you know, this new email, which is nice. So I made a mistake. I had an iPad that I thought my wife was logged into. I was logged into it and I created a domain name, my wife's name at, and I realized, oh shit, you know, so great. They give you the option to delete it. Awesome. Deleted it, created my name. Everything was cool. I go to my wife's account. They don't clean, delete anything. Because, you know, it's Apple, and honestly, they're not really that good software engineering. But
That's a bold statement.
I mean, half the shit they've released is broken. You know, there's things in it that don't work. At any rate, this is the same problem that Google had, and you and I know the person actually ended up fixing this at Google. But yeah, so basically, when you remove a iCloud domain email address, you cannot ever use it again.
It's tombstoned.
And of course, me being irritated, I send a couple of messages to iCloud support. They're like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're holding it wrong, blah, blah, blah. And then I finally get a guy on the phone.
Wait, you got a cloud vendor guy on the phone?
No, I got Apple support on the phone, which is probably some dude in the middle of nowhere.
I'm about to say, you didn't get a cloud vendor in any way, shape, or form. You got some random dude.
I got an Apple technical support person on the phone.
Okay.
And the thing that irritates me about Apple, and I wish I would have recorded this, but they won't give you a negative answer. If it makes Apple look negative at all, they will not answer your question. So what I mean by this is I said, listen, I'm a software engineer. I'm like, I just need you to tell me if this is a bug. And if it's a bug, can you create a ticket? And he's like, there is no ticket because there is no bug. This is how it was intended to work. And I'm like, it literally says something went wrong. Like, that's the error message.
Mm-hmm.
So Like, you can't tell me it was intended to work. It says something fucking broke. And he's like, no, well, I was like, just tell me that I cannot create that there's no way that I could ever create another name with this name after I deleted it. He's like, I'll tell you the answer that you want to hear. And he's like, and the way to do this is to create a name with a slightly different variation on what you want. I'm like, that's not what I fucking asked you. I'm like, I want to know if I can use the same name on a different account. And he's just like, and there was like dead silence for like 5 seconds. I'm like, listen, I'm like, I get it. You can't say anything negative about Apple. I'm like, just tell me that this is never going to work. And he's like, well, well, this is not a bug. This is how it is intended to work. I'm like, all right, listen, I got it. Bye. I hung the phone up.
Oh,
Apple. Like, I swear to God, these people, like, it's like, if you can get them to actually say something negative, good luck. Like they must be like, they must hate their job and they're about to, you know, leave.
It's impressive that they were able to get somebody to follow the rules that way. I mean,
Well, I'm sure they were recording the conversation.
Of course they were. The amount of oversight that makes it to the point that's impressive and scary all at the same time. You've run help desks and you know how this is. Getting them to follow a script is hard. Getting them to go and follow a rule as complicated and nuanced as this over time means they've had a lot browbeaten.
Just never say anything negative about Apple.
That's hard. He wouldn't even try to skirt the issue close to it. He wouldn't even come within a mile.
No, he's like, he basically told me, he's just like, there is no ticket you need to put in because there is no bug. Literally what he said to me. And I was like, okay.
Provably not true by your own metrics.
I'm like, it literally says something went wrong. So what went wrong? You tell me. Was it my input? Am I holding it wrong? Like, what the fuck?
What is it? Open Radar. Mm-hmm. You know about Open Radar, right?
Oh, this is Apple's ticketing system that they open sourced, right?
No, it's because nobody ever could get any understanding of their ticketing system. People have Open Radar, which is their internal one's called Radar, and nobody could ever find it. So people just keep track of it in a public radar system because they're like, at least we can, when we fire off into the void, we can make a duplicate copy over here.
That's probably exactly what I need to go fucking look at now. So anyway, that was my afternoon because it was extremely infuriated because all I really wanted them to tell me was, John, like, we understand it's a bug. It's probably so far down the fucking backlog list for the iCloud team that they're never going to look at it. Great. And
it's not
going to work.
I feel your pain. I use my personal domain. It's still attached to Google for login and I want to migrate it, but I don't know how many Google logins I have set up against it. And I'm like, what happens if I do move it and I need to get access and somebody does a shitty thing and it's a real login. I run a provider that I actually pay for it sometimes. Like I don't trust these guys anymore. It's not that they're not going to do a good job. It's that they don't give a shit about anybody that's using their product that isn't a major company.
They don't. Well, exactly. And even then, like, you need to be like a really large company for them to even
care about
hundreds
of millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. And the only thing that like I've never actually tried is, what if I created it, the email address using my account again, see if it would like let me recreate it.
I bet it won't either.
It fucking did. Those fucking assholes. So it's tied to my fucking, to my iCloud account and it'll always fucking work.
Yep.
But I can't fucking delete it. Apple, is that what you intended, you piece of shit? I bet not. Fuck you. Delete. Anyway.
Tell me what you really think.
I think that they need to get better software engineering managers. Because that is a provably Like, if you're going to write any tests for iCloud, any tests at all, create, delete.
I don't know shit. I'm making this shit up. What if that once the name is tombstoned, it's actually created in a database because they use per user level databases against a FoundationDB backend, that they route that name towards your database. And once it's there, it can never be routed back.
It's still a problem.
I know, but just it's an architectural. I'm just making shit up to argue against it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I understand how this could be a design limitation of how you built your backend. I get it.
But say it is.
Let's say it is. He thought he was smart. And he asked me, how long ago did you create it? Because sometimes it takes a long amount of time. He didn't even give me a time frame. He said a long amount of time to clean up. So the thing is he first said it does clean up because he said it takes a long amount of time to clean up. And then later he told me, oh, it never cleans up. So I said, oh, I did it a year ago.
And he's liar. Like, oh. Liar.
No, you're it was a year liar. Ago, actually. No, it was. I did it a year ago when I first created it.
Oh.
And honestly, it took me so long to like get to the point where I actually picked up the phone and called them that, or I didn't call them, but actually spent the time on my couch and said, you know, give me a phone call. Because I thought I was going to get someone that actually knew what they were talking about. Nope.
Well, two problems there. No, you're not going to get a big major company to get you, please. And then Apple's not going to admit they have a problem. It's a feature.
Yeah, that's a feature. Here's the thing. It will cost me $10 to get a different domain. I would probably pay them $100
to
get them to fix this bug.
But 99.999999%
no
of the people won't
aren't
give
even
a shit.
Using that feature.
Oh, yeah. And the ones that do don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit. Yeah, it's infuriating. But anyway, I'm gonna get off my high horse now because that is the infuriating thing of the day for me. That could have easily been, caught if someone actually wrote unit tests. Good thing we know Apple doesn't write unit tests.
They have a very interesting pickle configuration language, which is weird and complicated and fucking typed and everything.
PList?
No, PKL. PKLing. It's closer to like a JSON net than it is to a JSON or YAML or property list, but it's declarative. It's also nearly programmable.
Yeah, so I'm used to plist. This is just like
it's
the JSON version of plist. The non-verbose.
No, but it's declarative. It also has loops. It has functions. It's got a full API, so you can sit there. It's more like like HCL for it's closer to that than it is to the others.
What's the language with the templating language in Go?
Like that kind template of that you, template.
It's called template
TPL. Yeah, but this is actually closer to like a JSON net or HCL from HashiCorp, your favorite company.
I liked HashiCorp before they, took
I'm
money.
Picking on them until they took a lot of money and now they got to figure out how to pay back that VC.
Well, actually, it's not VC anymore. It's their public.
That's right. Private equity?
Yeah, private equity.
So I met with a startup today. Interesting product. Can't go into any of the things. Where I was asking where they were funded, and they're like, very simple. We're going to bootstrap. We're not touching VC money.
God, I wish that was viable
They got some hardcore tech. They're putting some time in. They're putting a fair amount of their own money in. But when you ask why, he had a very good answer. He goes, I don't know how many VC companies are doing enough due diligence in the ones that aren't are dying. I'm like, is that true? And I kind of see what you're, What's your hot take? I thought it was interesting. I don't know enough about this world, but.
So when he said, so I haven't heard of really any VCs, major VCs dying. We're talking the Sequoias, the Hudson Bay, Hudson Capital.
But they invest in so many things. They're just a scattershot, in my opinion.
Yeah. Right.
But
I mean.
But without cheap money, they can't get leverage. They can't force it as much. It's a hard business for them to be in.
I do agree that it's a harder business since the money's not cheap. But I also think that means that it's like, I guess the question that I'm struggling with here is do you have the same amount of entrepreneurs trying or actually getting funded? No. The answer is probably going to be no. Right. So now it means that they're going to get scrutinized more. They're probably going to need to either, give better terms or I don't know. I mean, honestly, it's been a long time since I've tried to get anything funded. So, the last time I tried, it was not the market it was for the last 10 years. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that you could have tripped over like a VC going to the bathroom in San Francisco. Right.
And he would have given you money
Yeah. So, and I mean, Silicon Valley Bank, that whole fucking, house of cards, is another joke, but
that was just stupid bank management repeatedly. But the fact that I love the quote about them more specific, was why did everybody agree to use the same goddamn bank for high risk VC money flow?
Do you know why? I mean, I could tell you why.
I know why. But why would anybody that took money go do that?
Because they don't have a choice.
You do have a choice. You always have a choice.
You have a choice depending on the leverage you have.
Of course.
So sometimes the CFO is appointed in those cases and the CFO is, a fractional CFO.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So they're probably, doing everything. I don't know. They need to make it easy for themselves, right?
I didn't think about the fact that the CFO, the fractional CFO, would be highly advantageous for them to just be like, I know them. I have a relationship with them. I can call them in 15 minutes and do the same thing I do with six other companies. And I never thought of it like that.
Now, the problem is did the VCs that had all their money parked there, did they actually put any money out to fund these ventures? Or was it basically all on credit from the Silicon Valley Bank?
I mean, we know for a fact they put actual money out. They were sending money into people's bank accounts. The problem that was happening was when pump companies were pulling all of their funds out ahead of the time because they knew this was going to happen earlier, and the banks were like, oh, fuck, we're not going to meet our requirements because Peter Thiel and a bunch of other people start hyping it up and start pulling money out.
They pulled money out before.
Three days before.
They went on fucking Twitter and they're like, oh, this is going to blow up. And then I'm sure they bet against all that shit in the fucking markets.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a little dishonest of them.
A little dishonest. I mean, who are we talking about here?
Peter's been known to be a ruthless is the polite way. Shady is the less polite way.
But back to kind of the original point, that you asked, I do think that, VCs, ventures are going to have to be more stringent with the money they give out, right? And what does that mean though, practically? Does it mean that you just need to have a better relationship with the person? Does it mean you have to have a better demo? Does it mean that like very rarely is the pitch and funding part about it's about the team,
mm-hmm.
right? It's about, it should be about the team. And it should be about the idea and what they've done in the past, right? But mostly it's about the team nowadays. And, I think that's still going to be true here, right? It just means that you're going to need to do more work and you're going to need to network more and you're going to need to spend less time building your product, which is unfortunate. But
I think that's right. I think people need to do that. I think that will happen. But I thought in the past, there was none of that was done. People were just assumed that, hey, we're investing in a person that had a good idea. They can pivot three times. They'll find a way. We are finding this person. And because we're willing to put out money to 100, we're expecting five to do well and one to do great. And if that's the bet, then you just let people pivot. But I don't think they can do that anymore. I don't know much about this world.
I don't know a lot about this world. Yeah, I don't know a lot about the world either. But what I do know, at least from, you know, friends and whatnot, is that it's not like they just wrote a check day out. Like, it was very rare for no questions asked. Here's a check. Like, go spend the rest of your time and build something great. Right.
Of course.
And even then, like 6 months before the money ran out, people were on the road, VC, like looking for investing. So like, it's not even the follow-up investment is still more work, right? So, you know, I think that's, I think personally, you said you spoke with the startup that you spoke with, you know, looking to bootstrap it. I personally would be looking for it to be default alive, right? Get to a point where you're making enough money to keep the business running, period. That means get
is
revenue.
Is that the term? Is that the default alive is the term?
I've never heard of it. That I think Y Combinator, like I think the blog and whatnot create, you know,
no,
calls
I like
it that,
that,
but default alive. Yeah. So yeah,
I like that because I like boring businesses. I like the idea of like, hey, this is now self-perpetuating. It's able to move under its own weight. It has enough. Sure, shit happens, the world changes, and it's got it. You have to fucking figure it out. But those are the companies I like. Long-term, constant minor growth, but they're holding their own weight up. They don't need a massive amount of VC capital to get in there. That's awesome. I don't know how you compete in something like a metric space or some of the established spaces without going to get to the VC money because they're big and got incumbent players unless you have something drastically different. But yeah, it's interesting. I didn't know that, Dan. I like it.
You know, again, I think everything's highly dependent on the market you're in, right? Like you're clearly not going to go and try to do an upstart chip fabricator and be able to do it in your fucking backyard, right? Like,
no.
So.
Look, come on. You want to keep SML? You'll take them on. You got a couple hundred dollars?
Baby.
In the backyard. One nanometer in my backyard.
Good luck getting even like 20 nanometers in your backyard. but I think given the, you know, given the knowledge, you know, knowledge workers that we are doing things like software development, doing things like SaaS services, and you could build these things with minimal investment other than time. There are some things, there are some spaces where, you know, you simply, you're not going to be able to do it because of the capital outlay required to start.
Yeah. And I think I agree with, but and that's the parts that I want to do more of. I don't want a $1 trillion company. I want a $100 million company that has a good business model. It keeps on running and just defines itself.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love to own a $1 trillion company.
The world changes at that.
Then I would just back off and say, enjoy the $1 trillion company. I'm going
to
go.
I got to move to Florida for tax reasons. Oh, I'm sorry. I got to move to be near my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. yeah. And I'm going to have like I pull my yacht up while they build my billion dollar, maybe even house. Right.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, I think the VC, listen, it'll be interesting to see, like, interest rates haven't come down. They're just not going up. And it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 5 years. Like, if they go down a little bit more, like, if they end up going down in the, like, do we jumpstart right back into the, you know, the cheap money machine?
I hope not.
I hope not either.
I love, but, like, don't get me wrong. It's been a great cycle, but it doesn't. Cheap money doesn't feel right. There's something, it doesn't feel like a good way to drive things. I don't know why. I don't have the economic background of why, but it feels odd that the rates are so cheap and everybody can just build for free. It feels propped up. It feels artificial.
I mean, I would say it probably is. I mean, I'm not an economics background. I would point to the, you know, this is a much larger discussion, but point to the national debt. And that's a whole bigger discussion.
That's a complicated one.
It's a very complicated discussion. We should do an episode on that, because I think it'd be very interesting to have us all actually like research it. But you know, I think the results of cheap money, are extremely negative in the long run.
Yeah. I think it particularly around it incentivizes bad behavior.
Oh yeah. I mean, just look at, so getting back to the COVID, you know, times when we literally just gave money away, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you run a business, here's a bunch of money. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of it was fucking stolen, but it was a whole lot of it.
Holy shit. Sorry. Newsflash. AWS acquires Talon Nuclear Data Center campus in Pennsylvania. They just bought a data center next to a nuclear power plant. Why do you think they did that?
I mean, because they're fucking smart.
Yes.
I mean, shit, I've been saying for years that we should stop. We shouldn't ignore solar power, but we should just fucking build a goddamn nuclear reactor, like build more nuclear reactors.
Oh, like 100%.
Like build more, like stop. Like, you know, until we actually decide to go, to actually invest in fusion.
We're not there yet.
Yeah. Because no one's spending the money. If
Europe we need is. To,
yeah. Okay. Europe doesn't spend money on anything.
What the fuck are you talking about? Have you, the largest man-made machine in the world is being built right now to build a Taurus network, for fusion, Taurus network. It's the single biggest machine on the planet already. And it's not done. You're like, it's not a thing.
What's the last innovation that came out of Europe? Period.
Why? So, this is a fun conversation. Why do you need innovation for nuclear power? I don't think you need innovation. I think you need
nuclear
good
power?
Engineering.
No. You absolutely do need innovation, right? You need to make it smaller, more safe.
How?
So, for example, let's say Japan, right? I think it was Japan. They were investing about 25 years ago. They're investing in was it Philips? Maybe that would be Japanese. Maybe Fujitsu. But they're investing in local nuclear power substations, mm-hmm. where basically you would have like large towns would have nuclear power. Why should you do that? I mean,
why do you think there needs to be innovation? What is wrong with so the reason why I say this, maybe I'm doing a bad job, is I'm not saying we understand nuclear power. We know how to build molten salt reactors. Mm-hmm. We know how to do all the types of reactors, including very small ones. The problem isn't innovation. It isn't technology. It's legal. It's regulation. It's the fact that in the United States, it's 47 years is the current time to get a new nuclear power online. And that's the one that just turned on in Georgia. The problem, what Europe's doing is they're trying to build a fusion reactor as a science project like CERN to prove out the technology at scale. And when I mean scale, we're talking real scale.
So my comment about Europe was a general comment, not specific about nuclear power, first of all. And second, we're not, for nuclear power specifically, we're even worse than Europe.
Yes.
Because we have this fear of like, I don't know, people in the 50s remember hiding under desks because they thought that was going to save them from fucking a nuclear attack, right? Like dumb. And all of those people, by the way, are probably still in Congress, Senate, but except for Mitch McConnell. But
we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that one. But my point being about innovation is I feel like Europe in general, like they're very good at operationalizing, and maybe I'm just thinking about Germans, but operationalizing and turning it into like a process, but like very few, at least I think, innovations come out of Europe. It tends to be, you know, Asia. It tends to be us.
I would agree that they are more rule followers than not. And I'll give you, I'll give you a good conversation I had with a startup I'm working with in for, they're based out of France. And he goes like, in Europe, he goes, it's impossible to build a startup because they don't run on transactional nature of cost and value. They run on relationships first and foremost. And he goes, it's brutal to try to be a startup inside of France. He was like, I'm expected to come in and make a relationship and they'll give me a little bit of money and we'll expand the relationship over years. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have another more relationship and we'll grow it over time. And he goes, as a startup, it's horrible. He goes, but I come into America, I show my value and they hand me a check for 14 times as much because they see the value. And then if I don't do it, they kick me out the fucking door.
Yeah. And the, you know, a lot of that, you know, it might also be the socialism and, you know, workers' rights.
Well, it's the part that was interesting from him was it wasn't. It didn't matter. It's that's the culture is that relationships for vendors and companies matter more over time. And it wasn't that he was trying to defend. That's just the culture of the norm of vendor relationships. The whole thing that he was explaining they want is they want a relationship that lasts time. I'm only inferring and guessing because it's just because that's what they expect and that's what they want. More consistency, boring, which plays into your innovation idea, less churn, less things. But the same person was also saying it's changing because nobody can make money against the Americans without startups.
Yeah.
Because they go, he goes, I love doing business in America. They're ruthless, but if my value is there, it's awesome. But the part he misses, he goes, 3 years, 5 years into a company, I hate the transactional nature of somebody I spent 5 years working with, and they were willing to walk away in a heartbeat. He goes, that part's the part that was hard for him. And I get that.
In America. Yeah, absolutely. In America. And listen, like, I mean, I think that's, listen, we've all had to, maybe not all of us, but we've had to walk away from jobs, right? And the truth of the matter is that we used to be, our culture used to be, you know, work here for 30 something years and you'll get taken care of and you'll get a pension. It ain't like that anymore. So you need to chase the bag, right? You need to go after more money. You need to go after like whatever it is that you want to do in your life. That's part of it. I think the part that maybe the person you were talking about more is that there's just less of that. It's much more detached, like in America working, I think, than some of the European
transactional
companies. That, transactional, yeah.
I'll say it like this. I can be friends with somebody, but the business relationship is by definition transactional. And that's fine. I know that. That's the culture I live in. Invert that where you can be friends and it also is expected to be that way in the workplace. And I can see why there's less innovation in the traditional startup churn culture in of Europe because of that consistency over time is valued over churn rate, whatever. They'll end up like us eventually if the current heading's going, because once you start this path, you can't not do more of it. It's kind of like,
it
game
takes
theory.
Like two generations and basically just, people are gonna
it's game theory. If everybody's gonna take steroids, I would take steroids. You have no choice.
And you know, I think you could argue which is better. Like I don't think necessarily this is better. I think for the technologists, the tinkers, like people like us, like yeah, it is better because we get to like be able to work on these new interesting things. Like it's like, ooh, shiny, right? But then at some point, in certain points of your life, you kind of just want to be able to like sit down and
focus
and build and focus have to like.
So like it's called ITER, ITER. It's a 223,000 ton machine. Its core, it will have a core of 10 times the core of the sun at 150 million degrees Celsius plasma temperature. Its fusion energy output will be 5,500 megawatts of power.
When's it going to be done?
Wait, no. Let me, this is the hardest engineering project on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
the scale of it. Wait, no, let me finish. It's the opposite of American style. This is going to take this is a 25-year build project. It's fine. Nobody else does this. CERN, the US doesn't do this.
When did they start?
They started 12 years ago, 16 years ago. They're powering it up. They're testing components. But yeah,
it should be done in 9 years.
No, oh, it's a government contract. It's going to take longer.
Willing to $1,000 says that they're not the ones that to get to fusion first.
Okay. Well, all right. What's the timeline?
For the rest of our lives.
No. We need a date. We got to put a date on it.
10 years.
All right. I'll take it. $1,000. Like, 10 years.
Yeah. All right. I think it'll be someone else because I'm pretty sure they're just going to never get it's going to be, you know, it's never going to happen.
I think this kind of projects are what enable other companies to come along behind them and do it in 5 years. The thing is they've taken all the risk out of the system by doing it by a giant consortium. They're proving out the things and they're testing it. It's like CERN. CERN is one of the most successful scientific experiments that cost a whole lot of money. The reason why somebody spent the time to do it. Now they want to build a bigger one. They're probably going to do it too. And that's awesome. But the rewards take decades, not years.
So let me ask this. Let me ask this question. Fusion, and again, I'm not up to speed as I should be on fusion, but fusion, they've gotten to ignition, right? And they've gotten past the ignition point and they've gotten a positive, I think, output.
So there's two types of reactor. There's a Tomac, which is what this is, which is a magnetic sealed plasma chamber.
Mm-hmm. The magnetic bubble.
Yep. And then there's the laser compression one, which is the combination US and Japanese, which has been a project that's been run for 30 years almost now. That's the one that's received positive ignition. And its output is twice as much of its input for, 12 seconds, I think is its record or something like that. I don't trust the numbers, but it's small, but it's still a huge amount of power. Most of the things I've read from published papers is that the Tomac is the better design for long term because of the stability it has potential for producing power over long periods of time. It's the boring, but it's a boring process. And the most, like, if you were to go ask somebody who came up through all of science, go design this from new base principles, they'd probably land on a Tomac design. But doesn't mean it's the most efficient, doesn't mean it's the perfect design, but it means it's the one but we have understand they got the best.
But have they got it working?
They've gotten ignition. They haven't produced more output than input. They know Tomac works.
Well,
they just don't know that. They just don't know that they can produce at scale. So the iTurn is not a whether Tomac design can work. It's whether it can scale up to provide real output, usable, viable output.
So it's like so it's a volume situation, right? Where they need more volume to be able to produce more power.
Right. It's the input. Well, I can show you can build a nuclear reactor that produces output of very limited capacity. It's not that hard. It's the scale. It's right. To do it over time. It's to produce it over a period of time. And that's what the iTurn's goal is to. How do we produce power and prove that this technology is viable in the industry? Now, there are other companies that are doing it in a very, very different way. And there are startups, so they're more American-like. There's the one Bill Gates has invested in. There's a couple other startups. And they keep on dying in the United States because of regulation. It's so complicated.
Fucking regulation. A bunch of worried about, like, you know, again, they grew up when they were hiding under the goddamn school desks. They thought that was going to protect them from nuclear.
It's actually, I'm going to say, I violently agree with you, but I think it's a public persona. It's a public problem.
Because we've spent 70 years saying nuclear is bad and it's going to burn down. I mean, Homer Simpson, for God's sakes, always hit the button.
And it's There is more carcinogens pushed into the air every single day by coal factories than have been produced in nuclear power factories. I mean, there's just no comparison. But
well, it's the waste too, right?
No.
The problem, the real problem with fission is the waste produced, the nuclear rods.
I don't think so. It scares the shit out of people, but people don't like. So the reason why I'm arguing this is because I want to make a point, is that we have a fuckload of empty space in the United States. People don't remember how empty this motherfucker
is. Okay. But let me be clear. Yes, we have a lot of space. Yes, we even have we could shove it to the bottom of the ocean if we really wanted to. That's not the point I was making. The point I was making is that the problem, the risk, and is not the meltdown, right? It's generally with the nuclear waste, the management of the nuclear waste.
People are it's going to be NIMBY plus. I didn't know what NIMBY could have been, but yes, it's NIMBY plus. Nobody wants it within a billion miles of them, and they're going to fight using every legal methods they can.
I mean, fucking New Mexico should just say, send us your nuclear waste.
They bombed themselves to halfway there.
Well, they didn't. But
the U.S. government. Then there's this whole thing called the Nevada. It's basically been annihilated by itself, by the U.S. government.
But yeah, I mean, the point is, though, like, yes, we have a lot of space. Do we really want to, like, pollute? Sure. But, like, has anyone actually spent time thinking, like, what can be actually used with those?
Yes. So France has a reuse program that reprocesses all plutonium. They remove up to 97% of all fission material in radioactive by reprocessing the highly radiated process and keeping it in the same chamber. Basically, they reprocess it down till it's extremely radioactive, but it's a much smaller percentage. And France basically has the most effective nuclear program in the world. Something like, 97% of their power is generated. Yeah. And fucking safe. Produces an ungodly amount of power. It is relatively cheap.
I should not have a conversation about nuclear power without knowing more about it. But the rods.
I love this topic. I've watched way too many YouTube videos, read too many books.
The rods themselves they're obviously radioactive, but they still have heat too, right?
They take a fair amount of time to cool down. Yes.
Why wouldn't you just use that and generate power? Which is the rods in the water.
They do. That's
okay. So they don't just put them in a vault and drop them somewhere.
But they do. But the efficiency drops down so quickly when you're not dealing with steam that pulling heat out of water is basically, why don't you bash your head against the wall? You need steam. The part that I find more interesting is there's a liquid sodium reactors, which are my favorite design if you've ever seen them. They are. We do not know how to make them go critical because there's not enough space inside the sodium. The particles can't get dense enough to be a problem. It's just because the sodium is always there. And if it overheats, it melts the plug and drops out the sodium at the bottom. It's literally just make it with cheaper materials that the reactor melts.
Literally melts, not melts down, but melts
down
the housing.
But that's fine because it's not enough to ever be a problem. Just don't build it over groundwater, and it's liquid sodium. So guess what happens when it cools down? It's a sodium's a metal, so it's a very easy to cut metal. You can cut it like a butter knife. That's awesome.
Isn't sodium or is that magnesium where you pour water on it and lights on fire?
Yeah, that's potassium or magnesium.
Yeah. So
you don't want to put potassium and power plants together.
so what is the France's reactors? What makes them so
effective? I don't know. I just know that they reprocess their used spent rods very efficiently. And they have a they have a system to, once the rods are no longer producing enough power to generate enough steam, they process them in another way to make sure that they use more of the fissionable material out. While in the United States, we just store it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't reprocess it multiple times afterwards. And that reprocess means we have much more quantity of a nuclear material that we have to deal with, because we just, in the United States, one of the hardest things to move around in this country is not a nuclear bomb.
It's the waste, because you can't go between states, right?
But it's extremely hard and it takes a lot of time. You can move a nuclear bomb because nobody gets to choose that, because it's not their control.
Well, the federal government.
It's the federal government. But if you're a private corporation trying to move nuclear waste across state lines, the other people are like, well, you can't stop people across the state lines, but I can make the policy process so fucking hard that
I don't know why states just don't write off the nuclear waste and donate to the federal government and drop it in a fucking, in like a park.
I actually like that. That's a simple accounting method for like, you guys can move this wherever the fuck you want. Well, you know about the vault in Yuma, right?
No.
So they built in a relatively stable salt cavern in Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona is unique because it is one of the most isolated desert places in the planet. And it has so little rainfall, it's astronomical. So they're like, yeah, we just dug a big hole in the ground 2 miles down. And we built all these caverns. They used to be salt mines, but we went way deeper. And we're going to say that all nuclear fuel should be stored here. It's geologically stable. We don't have anything to worry about. And there's nothing nearby. But nobody will allow it to be transported there. Because regulations and fights and NIMBY and how dare you.
So there's just a 2 mile deep hole?
It's massive. Something like it can store. If we powered the entire country all on nuclear power for, I think it was like 200-300 years, we wouldn't fill up but half of it.
Well, but it's just there. No one's actually doing anything with the hole, right?
The U.S. government built it.
But the U.S. government built it, and they're the ones that could actually solve the problem. This is the regulation versus the...
This is politics. This is not regulation. This is politics.
So not to go entirely on a different tangent, but how do you build a 2 mile deep hole?
I've watched a video about that. It depends on the ground. I don't know how you do it in the desert. Strange side note. Do you know there's an entire town in Oklahoma that's underground?
Strange side note. Do you know there's an entire town, I believe in Pennsylvania, on fire?
Yes.
Had been on fire for like 20 years.
Yep. Coal. Coal veins.
Coal, baby. So no, tell me the one about Oklahoma.
So there's a salt mine. You can fun set. They have a mountain bike trail you can go on. But it's also part of the National Archive system. But it's a town in a salt mine in Oklahoma. It is one of the most controlled environments for moisture that we have. So the U.S. government and a lot of archive companies have set up shop in there, so that you want to archive your paper documents for 7,500 years. This is the perfect place because it's an extremely low moisture environment. The U.S. Postal Service uses it as a sorting facility for Oklahoma State.
Of course they
do. In Texas. There's a bunch of other things there. There's a general shop down in there. It's literally, they have a town. It was just basically a salt mine that they built out.
So it's like the Vatican's vault, except yes. Natural. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. The crazy things that people, you know, that you can get government funding to do, but then people just never use it.
I mean, and there's it's easy to blame, but it's often the best of intentions. But nobody, like, the opposite of what we were talking about in Europe is what we have here is we have very short attention span.
What'd you just say?
Sorry. In the United States, we have a very short attention span. I'm fucking slow. The goldfish.
I was like, really?
God damn. I'm not very bright.
So I agree. And I mean that combined with the way that the way that appropriations work, where everyone pork bellies it up and they send money back to their hometown to build a fucking 2 mile deep salt line that no one's ever gonna be able to fucking use.
I've just been reading more about the Appropriations Committee versus some of the other committees and the fights that they're having and the territorial bullshit that goes on in the Senate and House. I was like, I had no idea how crazy it was.
So, before we should not go too deep into this.
No, we should not.
This is something that you could just spend hours researching. But do you know how ridiculously complex the federal government and committees are?
No, but I'm slowly coming into contact via reading with them, and I'm very, very, yeah.
There is a joint committee that it still exists on printing.
Of course. I expect nothing less. Did I ever tell you about my... Bears, the company's out of business, so I don't mind talking about an old client of one of my jobs. Bear Stearns was one of our clients. And we had an outage of their first internet presence.
No.
Yeah. And so we're sitting on the phone with the after outage report, and they did the introductions. And after VP 7, we got to the VP of cabling. We got to the VP of telephony systems, which was POTS lines, not Ethernet, on the same fucking call for a down internet connection that had nothing to do with their infrastructure. And I'm like, what the fuck are these people doing? Well, to find out, you can't put an Ethernet cable out in there without the VP of cabling approving the design. Now, that was 25 years ago.
Yeah, and if you don't think there are still companies like that, then...
most definitely are. And I'm guessing the U.S. government is, by definition, the largest company in the United States because it's run like a company. Yeah.
And it is amazing, like, when you start to look at how these committees are run, how many people work for these committees, the type of just fucking bullshit that these committees continue to churn. And the best part about this, I'm pretty certain that these committees like don't have to go through appropriations to fund themselves.
Slight nuance of the article that caused me to look at this is that the appropriations bill just ripped. So pause. I'll give them more backstory because it's more appropriate. The committee that does the agency that reviews monopolies to bring cases for monopolistic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So they are partially funded by the outcome, the payments of their litigation. Makes sense because it's ebbs and flows, because they made the argument that in 1989 that, you know, they don't need a flat budget. They need to be able to be cyclical. And in order to respond to cyclical is like, hey, they had a number they presented. They go like every 15 years, we're going to have an influx of them because that's the market cycle to create monopolies. And I'm like, okay, that seems reasonable. And they're like, so the profits will be deferred until they're needed to fund it over time. And you'll have a flat budget from our appropriations, but we will be funded above and beyond our standardized budget from our funds that we accumulate from legal win cases. Great. Well, the committee that oversaw them approved their money without going to the appropriations committee in the last term. The appropriation committee got pissed and redid their entire billing cycle and pushed it through their appropriation cycle. Guess who gets priority? The Appropriations Committee, because they charge them money. You better not mess with their territory or they're coming for you.
I mean,
that just creates infighting.
But what's even crazier is that just think about the whole situation, and then every so many years it flops. It could flip. It's just a huge fucking dick measuring contest.
This is why professionalization of some of those the agencies should be done. Whether you agree or not, the agencies should be professionalized and be more like lawyers and have bar mm-hmm. associations and hold high. And by doing that, you're like, great, you guys come and go and you set the tone and direction, but we're going to be professional all the time. But that's tough, particularly when you're dealing with our particular candidates for the commander in chiefs.
Yeah, we're not going to start talking about that.
Nope.
But I think the hard thing is that when I just see the number of just people that are working on these things, it's like, do we really need all those people doing all this stuff?
I'm sorry. This is where me and you are going to disagree.
You're probably right.
That's fine. I think that it takes a lot to run something as big as this. And I don't know how to go. I'm sure you can save 10% here or there. But
guarantee you, I could cut 10%.
Yeah, but what are you going to cut for somebody that represents those people's jobs? And how are you going to make the senator happy? How are you going to deal with
I'm all not.
That? Okay.
I'm not. That's why I think that, like, you know, these appropriations bills should be, like, they should have some type of, I don't know, non-elected committee that actually goes through them and actually does the actual cutting work, not the fucking senators.
Okay. Can't have a democracy and then not have democracy about money.
Well, you absolutely can, because we do it.
No, great. This is an interesting question. Because I believe what I said was true, but I'm also open to being
wrong. The Federal Reserve is not a democracy.
So what are you saying? Wait.
The point that I'm making is that you can absolutely fund a some private pseudo private entity to do like the actual budget. And we sort of do this with like where they do, what is it? The congressional, whatever office will say like this budget is friendly to whoever, like they basically will do reports. But like the point that I'm trying to make is like the whole reason these budgets are so, and I'm making a sweeping statement, but the whole these budgets are so complex and is because of all the fucking promises and everything that everyone has done. Like what you need to do is just break it down into essential things. And then you break it down into non-essential things. And then but we can have conversations about those and some, like something like the postal service where you fund them.
Hey, so you've been at large corporations. Mm-hmm. Who controls the money has all power, right?
Well, definitely not in the federal government.
No, but I'm talking about in large companies.
Yes, in large companies, yes.
So the definition of the reason why I say you can't have a democracy with power being outside of the democratic process where people are elected and they get to exert their power towards money means that all the power would land with who can give away gifts. And once they can give power, they are
where do we live right now?
No. But it's our fault. But if I gave it to John Ballone to do it for the country and said, you're not king, you're just the CFO, you're still king.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can make the money go and buy favors by saying, hey,
well, I think they're
if you don't do what I want, your towns won't get my funding. And that means you won't get your votes. It doesn't matter whether the people know or not. You're not going to be able to say you did it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there's other ways that we could structure, like, you know, kind of like how parliaments can just get dissolved if shit doesn't happen. Like, I think there are ways we can.
I would be now a whole different form of democracy, such a parliamentary system instead of our first past the post system. Interesting. There's some downsides. it's very interesting how our country runs, and I don't know another one that really does it. But there is much more interesting ways of doing it. Excuse me. I just don't know how to separate money and power.
I mean, they got to figure it out because we ain't exactly paying our debt off at some point.
I don't know how much we want to go into the debt thing, but I don't think debt is as... What?
We shouldn't go too much into it. Since it could take another hour and a half.
I don't think our debt is as big of a problem as we like to talk about, but I'm not happy with it. I think it can be better done. I think we should tax more.
Yes. I think we should tax more. I think we, you know, personally, I think we... I don't know how to, way simpler. I don't know how we can actually do it, but someone needs to go in and just start fucking blindly cutting the budget, starting with like the fucking military. Holy shit. Like, do we really need to take all the money and give it to private corporations to build fucking whatever the fuck they want?
Now,
multiply by 10 the actual cost.
I would love competition for actual military projects. I think that would actually be much better system.
Hot take for the end of this episode. I think that Nevada and New Mexico should say that they're declaring the ability for anyone to come there and test whatever fucking weapons they want, but the federal government's not going to give them the money to do it. So the winner take all present to us every year, and that's what we're going to buy.
There would be way better outcomes if we could get more competition in military contracts.
Yes.
You get more innovation. Take advantage of this now thing to cause that, because right now we don't. We have whatever Boeing is, whatever Lockheed Martin is. I mean, these things are designed to extract money from the U.S. government in very boring, methodical ways. Those things, but we need to, you need those on top of, how the fuck do we create another one of those? How do we get another Boeing? How do we get another Lockheed Martin? How do we allow those things to come up?
I would say that the closest thing to being another Boeing, Lockheed Martin, BAE is Palantir. It basically grew out of that space, and it's a government contractor, and you know, that's where they get all their money from.
Yes. I didn't think about them because I hated dealing with them anywhere else.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's that could be a whole other hour.
Yes.
But
all right, I want to close out for 5 minutes on a video game, even though we're shifting a little bit away from video game. We got to talk about Helldivers 2.
Helldivers 2. How do you want to talk about it? Like, why is it so fun?
No, I want to start in a different thing. Is why is there more depth in that game than anybody wants to admit and to talk about? All they want to do is shoot bugs. But holy shit, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And, you know, the interesting thing about, I think, Helldivers is that when people started playing the game, they went into it like a... What's the battle royale games, right?
Yeah.
Let me just jump in, start shooting things, kind of play with some other people, do the mini quests, and then get the fuck out. And now after what are we, a month in or however long it's been around, people are starting to see that there's a mini game with like if you can get the community to basically do certain things, you can now have you could start to do interesting things with the world. And I mean, these are things that honestly they've existed in games for a while, but they haven't been tied up into a neat package. And, you know, I think Helldivers in particular, it's a mix of campaigns that last from 10 minutes to 40 minutes.
Yep.
And, They sidestepped the whole friendly or PvP versus non-PvP because there just is PvP. Yeah. And you're not really playing against other people, but you also have to there's not an option to be safe. Deal with it. Yeah. And that's the best way to deal with these things, right? Why create the ability for people just to ignore that's stupid. Like just they simplified the areas of the game that typically create the most negative feedback, right? And negative actions and negative like results.
I didn't think about that, but I like that there is no choice in how you play. If you're playing this game, it's by definition social, by definition dangerous, and you're going to fucking die. Get good with your teammates because you're not going to do it alone.
Right. And there are very few things in the game that you can actually complete on your own beyond the easy mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because like it's not meant to do that. You're not meant to, you know, be a single player and explore, and it is what it is. It's a very, very good co-op team-based game. And The great thing about it is that, you know, I mean, there's like a million fucking people playing it now, like literally at one time.
And they're trying to coordinate because of what you're talking about. The mini game is like, look, it's not only a mini game. They literally tell you we have a major mission that everybody needs to go work on this. Some people get bored and don't do it. And it shows up as an outcome in the entire world.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, small percentages of people that don't, you know, pay attention or don't follow the rules, and those small percentages multiplied over a population of a million cause a lot of problems.
They lost Maravon Creek. Every game, Maravon Creek. Some people are very salty that people weren't helping keeping the creek.
You know, the thing is that I hate to say it, that like I just jump in. I didn't really follow anything other than like I've read the map. And honestly, most of the time I just quick play. I don't even choose, like just a quick play. Drop me in. The game is awesome. I personally play it on the PlayStation. The only bad thing about the game, is the cross-platform matchmaking. It doesn't really exist. Like you can play with people on the PC, but they have a friend code like Nintendo that you have to give to your friend to join your squad.
I had no idea.
It's pretty. So I got a couple friends that are on the PC and we were going to play, and I have to basically give them a 6-digit code so that they can type
every
6-digit
time?
Code it every single time.
Oh, that's a nightmare. So you can't friend them via some system and then be like, I can join them. Oh, that sucks.
So that's a shitty thing that I feel like it's a Sony game. Sony should just fucking make the PlayStation Network. Like make a goddamn app on Windows and Mac. Like it's not that hard. Let me talk to my friends.
Yeah.
Let me join things or integrate with Steam. Make it easy. They haven't done it.
Well, everybody's still waiting for Xbox to be allowed in, because then there's a whole fleet of new players coming in.
Are they going to do that? I mean, it's a Sony game, so I don't know if Sony's going
to
do it.
They've committed to letting Xbox in. I know that they don't have a time frame. So it's supposed to be released at some point in time, but I guess
they did the initial. They're like, hey, we're going to give it to PlayStation and PC first. And yeah, I mean, listen, this game's going to be fucking amazing. And I can just imagine the more DLC that comes here. Like,
I can't wait for the mechs to find out how bad I'm at.
Oh, yeah, the mechs. See, I don't play as much as I
should. I don't play enough either.
And like the part of me, like I haven't actually raced since I started playing this game, which is saying a lot.
Ooh.
And I'm getting that itch. Like I was like, I want to go race around the fucking track. So I don't know. We'll see how long I play Helldivers 4, especially since like I don't like playing the game when I don't have other friends that are playing. So that's kind of like my situation. I don't want to join a group of people just to go shoot fucking bugs and not interact with them.
I did a bad thing.
Uh-oh.
I bought another PlayStation because I can't.
I told you you should have done this.
I couldn't play. I couldn't play because my son takes it all the time. So
Hold on 1 second. You couldn't play because your son takes it all the time. Let's back that statement up. It's in your son's bedroom.
Yes.
And your son had to kick you out of the bedroom so that
this
he could
all
sleep.
True. This is true. Well, completely true. I ordered another PlayStation because I want to be able to play, but I also have to give up my account to him because it's got all of it. So I'm going to be getting a new account.
That's all right. I'm
going to miss my Gran Turismo 7 account with all my stuff, but
I can just start over. What I would have done is made my son like, okay, you want my account? You're going to be doing these chores for the next 3 years.
You should try that with your daughters. See how that goes.
Oh, it's never going to work with my daughter. My son will work. Not my daughter. My daughter's like, she laughs at me and goes upstairs. You're funny, Daddy. And then she comes over and says, Daddy, I love you. Can I get something? Yes. Yes, my child.
Yes. Yes. Whatever you want. All right, sir.
All right. Have a good night, sir.
You too. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bites of Wisdom podcast. To support us, please subscribe on LinkedIn, Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. We love feedback. You can reach us at feedback@biteswisdom.com. Until next time, stay curious.